I think this class and two more will be all we have. So I got to get off the stick, haven't I? I'm going to finish my part of it. I hope y'all do yours. I'd like to make a request of each of you. Visitors don't have to unless they want to. They can. I'd like, when we're finished with the class, with the course, write up the course and tell me what you think could be changed to make it better. If you have things you feel that I didn't present it like it should be, flag those too. But give me a good critique of the course and my efforts to teach the course. I'd appreciate it. And I'll use it in try to put together a little better working aids than what I have in the past.
Does this mean that you're going to teach Revelation again very soon?
I didn't plan on it. But I'd like to get my literature up to date if, as much as I can. But if you want to start over, I will just start over next quarter if they'll give us a classroom. Tonight I want to start on Revelation 21, starting with verse 9 and going through the rest of that chapter. And then we will continue in chapter 22 with the part of the chapter that pertains to the same thing that these verses in chapter 21 contain. I want to start off by reading the first few verses here, and then I want to have some discussion on it. Starting with verse 9. And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, I will show thee the bride of the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God, and her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal, and had a wall great and high, had 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and names written thereon, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. On the east 3 gates, on the north 3 gates, on the south 3 gates, and on the west 3 gates. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And he that talked with me had a golden reed to measure the city and the gates thereof, and the wall thereof. And the city lieth foursquare, and the length is as large as the breadth. And he measured the city with the reed 12,000 furlongs. The length, the breadth, and the height of it are equal. He measured the wall thereof 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of the angel. And the building of the wall of it was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, like unto clear glass. And the foundations of the wall of the city were garnished with all manner of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third a chalcedony, the fourth an emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardius, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth the topaz, the tenth a chrysoprasus, the 11th a hyacinth, the 12th an amethyst. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Every several gate was of one pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, as it were transparent glass. And I saw no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it, and the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honor into it. And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there. And they shall bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. And there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's book of life. What did you notice a little bit different about what you may have expected? Well, if we go back and talk about the angel that was talking with John, he was one of those who had brought the seven bowls of wrath, bowls of God's wrath, and poured it out on the earth at the appropriate time. What were those seven bowls of wrath? What were they indicative of?
Judgment, destruction.
All right, judgment. And it was a judgment that was brought on the people by their wickedness. And in this particular case, this is the second one that we've had that is just basically judgments. The trumpets being the first judgments that were brought. This one was much more severe and much more complicated than any of the others. There was one thing about those judgments that is also kind of unique. They didn't bother the people who had the mark of God on their foreheads. They weren't bothered. Only the people who had the mark of the beast were involved with these judgments. And the objective of the judgment was to get them to turn away from the way that they were living and the things that they were doing and place themselves under God's care. So right up until the very last that we're looking at this, God is trying to convert people to following after him. Okay? Now, another thing that I thought was a little bit different here. Did you notice that the city is called not the bride? Well, she's called the bride of Christ, the Lamb's wife. And I don't recall having looked at that term with that connotation before, the Lamb's wife. What's different here?
The total other places, the church is the bride.
Okay, church is the bride. But not necessarily calling it the Lamb's wife. That's the point that I'm trying to get at. I think what we're looking at here, I know what we're looking at here, is New Jerusalem. It is in heaven. And it's at this point in time where the glorious woman that we see, or the church, and we referred to it as the faithful followers of God, But they are here as the church, the bride of Christ, now the wife of Christ. We're looking at a time here after the second resurrection. We're looking at a time when the relationship between Christ and His church has been finalized, consummated, if you will. And now the church represents the wife of Christ. Not a bride-to-be, if you will, but the wife of Christ at this point in time. The relationship is gone to the point where Christ has taken His church to heaven. Okay? Now, if you notice in verse 10 here, He said, He carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain. This is the second woman that John has really been given a good look at. The first one was who?
Babylon.
And Babylon represented just exactly the opposite to what we see in this woman. This woman is pure. She's adhered strictly to the law that God wanted her to follow. She's been faithful to Him. Babylon, on the other hand, was spreading evil every way she could spread it, and using just about every approach to talking people into committing evil that she could come up with. This woman is pure in all regards. And that's the basic difference. Now, what we see back over there in chapter 17 was that other woman. Now, John is introduced to the woman who is what she should be. Okay? Now, there's another thing here in this verse, or this next verse. Having the glory of God, and her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. It's from this passage, and there may be one in another place, that talks about the jasper as being clear as crystal. The jasper as itself, from that time period, apparently related or identified a stone that was kind of gray in color and opaque. It was not a clear stone. The fact that this one is presented as being clear as crystal give rise to the idea that this is being referred or compared to a very precious diamond, clear as crystal, no flaws in it. But this is the way the light from this city, this woman, is being portrayed. Clear as crystal. We're going to see later on here, and I'll get to it in just a few minutes, but there's no sun and no moon, no stars in this picture because they don't need it. God is its light. He provides all of the light that's necessary. And that's an important factor in this particular city because it's unique. A lot of commentaries go to great lengths to portray the restoration or the doing away with the old earth and talk about it as being refurbished to be the new conditions. The book is talking about a new heaven and a new earth because it's altogether different. The thing that has corrupted the earth that we live in has been sin from the very beginning. But this new heaven and new earth have been built with none of that effect as part of it. It's also mentioned in here that in addition to not having the need for lights, let's see if I can find it in my notes. It talks in one place about, I'll get to it when I get to it. Let's go ahead and talk about the walls. If you recall from the Old Testament, there was a pattern given for the temple. And I want to just sketch it up here just a little bit. Because this picture is following that pattern pretty well. Now, all of these walls are the same. And this is a holy place. This is the Holy of Holies. This is the holy place. And this is where the priests, the common priests, could come to perform their duties. I've drawn this picture in the standard way that maps are drawn. And when we get around to studying geography, you're going to run into this. This is north. The top of the map, or the top of the drawing, is always north. So you automatically know how to orient yourself on the map. The top is always north. Okay? Why is that important? It's in this part of the Holy of Holies that the Ark of the Covenant is located. Okay? This is a perfect square on this plane, and it's a perfect dimension in the third dimension. This is a perfect cube. It was in the design of the temple. It was the design of the tabernacle and then the temple. This was a perfect cube. God's presence was felt right here. Okay? Right there in the mercy seat. It always opened east because that was toward the rising sun. But that was the direction that God wanted everything oriented. And tabernacles or temples today of the Jews, their temples were always oriented with the front part of the temple or tabernacle facing east, and this compartment being a perfect cube. It'd be 10 cubits by 10 cubits by 10 cubits. And if you notice here, he says that the building was four square. The length as large as the breadth, the height and breadth and length all equal. Now, there's no temple in here. There's no temple because what God is showing us is the perfect temple. And that is the perfect city that God is going to reside in. It mentions in the passages that we have for tonight. it mentions that this came down from heaven and it had the perfect dimensions of a cube. Now, anybody remember those dimensions? Was it 15,000 furlongs? What was the dimension?
12,000. Or 16.
Yeah. How long would that be? Oh. In something we understand.
It says 1380 miles. So 1,380 miles.
Okay.
What did you say?
1380 miles. I may have made a mistake on that calculation earlier. I think 1,500 is really what it should be.
The American Standard says 1,500 miles. It doesn't even translate.
Because a furlong is 1/8 of a mile. And if you divide that 12,000 by 8, it comes out to 1,500, I believe. So, now think about this. New Jerusalem, think about it as being this part right here of that old temple or old tabernacle. Except the dimensions he's given it is 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles that direction. The important thing that's coming out of this is God's city is the perfect cube. Everything is proper. And the 12,000 furlongs are symbolic. Here again, if you have the 12,000 furlongs, you have 3 times 4 times 10 times 10 times 10. We've been over this before, so you are not being caught by surprise here. And the 3 by 4 giving us 12 is divinity working through creation to a perfect power. So what it's saying is God has prepared himself a place that is perfect in everything regarding its configuration. It's perfect. It fits every requirement that God has. And that should be important to us. Because what God is telling us is heaven is going to meet every need that our souls will have when they get there. If they get there. And our job is to make sure that if turned into a when. Okay? Any questions or comments? Now, in the walls of this perfect city that we see coming down, in the walls there are 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. 12 gates, representative of the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, the placement of these, he doesn't tell us. What I'm talking about, the tribe represented by each position on that wall. He doesn't tell us that. And if we go back into the Old Testament, we will find at least 2 different configurations on who camped where in regard to the tabernacle as they were moving through the wilderness. So, which tribe was occupying or was in front of or named on which gate doesn't seem to be of importance. It's not given. And it's not something that we should spend a lot of time going over. But keep in mind, we have the 12 tribes represented by the 12 gates. And then we have another 12. We have 12 foundations under the building. Okay? And 12 foundations under the wall. But the foundations are named after the 12 apostles. And the figure that we get from this is God is saying that his city, his capital, his temple, is built on what the apostles did on this earth. And that was to carry the gospel of God to the people. Okay? And then, once we get above the foundation, and we look at the walls of the cities, we see the 12 gates, indicating that the city is open to all, both Jew and Gentile, who are obedient to God in their lives. Okay? Any questions or comments? Now, there's some things in here that I don't know how to answer. And one of them is, why is the wall so high? It's mentioned as 144 cubits. Now, I'm not sure whether that's the dimension of the wall from standpoint of its height, or is it from a standpoint of its thickness? I'm prone to believe that it's the thickness that's identified with the 144 cubits. Now, he goes ahead and a lot of the discussion from here on to the rest of the chapter is going to be about those dimensions and the type materials and I would call it enhancers that are in the different places, like the precious gems that are used in all of the foundations of the wall, also the building of the wall was likewise precious. And then we get down to the latter part of it, we find the naming of those, but in this case, he also brings in the idea of gold used in the construction of this. It said it was gold, it was clear as a mirror, clear as crystal. Well, gold can be polished to be clear, and it looks just like a mirror. If you see a span of gold that's been highly polished, it's a beautiful piece, it's a beautiful surface. But the point that God is making here, I believe, is that this entire building, New Jerusalem, and maybe I should take the holy place off of it so I don't confuse it, but the building of New Jerusalem, the construction of it, the layout of it, is in perfect dimensions to satisfy God, and it is a city, the beauty of which we have a hard time even imagining how beautiful this place would be. And I think that's the point of all of this description. Its grandeur exceeds anything man could even dream up. It is that far ahead of anything we know on this earth. but it's a gorgeous place. It's suitable for the two top authorities in this universe, God and Jesus Christ. And they sit in here on their throne. Okay? Any questions? Now take this as just representing the New Jerusalem as it comes down from heaven. And these are 12,000 furlongs, was it? And the same all the way around. First or second? First. Okay. When we go over into the next part, which goes to the next chapter, 22nd chapter, we see him giving us some other things that were going on in this city. First five verses of the next chapter. And he says, and he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, was there the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits and yielded her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. And they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. And there shall be no night there, and they need no candle, neither light of the sun, for the Lord God giveth them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. Okay. So, we have the city. We have the river of the water of life flowing in this city. Now, several different ways that have been proposed as to how that river flows. It says it comes out of the throne from God. And I suspect it may be very close to where in other scenes we had the sea of glass. It may be associated with that. That's a hypothesis on my part. But the point is, from each of the gates, three on each wall, from each gate, there is a boulevard that comes toward the throne. And just like in that old temple or tabernacle, where the mercy seat is in here, we find God's throne in the very center of the heavenly Jerusalem. Okay? All of these boulevards coming in each of these three gates on each wall, all of them come to this central part there. If I'm understanding the write-up properly. And he shows that the river apparently is critically placed so that anyone entering the city has immediate and unrestricted access to the river of the water of life. Okay? And on either side of that river is the tree of life. And the tree of life, he says, the leaves were for the healing of the nations. And the nations that he's talking about in this case are those Gentiles who have rendered obedience to the gospel and have lived their lives as God wants them to live it. And here he's making provision for them just like he did for the Jews. Okay? And I'm going to stop there. The next three sections of the book deal with a endorsement, if you will, by God of what's written in the book. The next one is an endorsement by Jesus Christ for what's written in the book. And then the next one is their dismissal of John. And then the final part is John's farewell to the people in the churches in Asia. Any questions or comments? Now, next two classes, I would like to go over those last two parts in a little bit more detail than what I've just done. But I will also go back, and some of them that we didn't maybe cover as thoroughly as we should, if you'll have a list of those that you would like to cover some more, we can use one of those sessions to finish out with. I have enjoyed being with you, and you've been a good class.
For those that's going to be in here next quarter for Acts, the material's on the front. You might get it tonight, but it's up there if you want to get it.
What it boils down to on Book of Revelation, he's telling us how to come back to paradise. So we've gone from the first three chapters of Genesis where man was in the paradise of God. And now, after all of the centuries, they see their way back to the paradise. Is that fair enough?
Yes, this time they'll appreciate it.
Huh?
This time they'll appreciate it.
I hope so.